Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Where's Fielder?
He's gone to the dogs.
Hello.
Fred Moran.
Yeah, that's what they call me. Some call me a lot worse.
Steve Fielder.
I ain't heard from you in so long. I thought you may bit the dust, but I read a full cry article that you had in there, so I know you're still kicking.
All right, I'm still trying to promote those registered dogs. You read
that copy of that check in 1907, that was pretty damn good. How did you get a picture of that check after this long?
Okay.
Naturally, the picture was taken way back then, but who kept it that long?
Well, actually, that was the actual receipt, and my grandfather, Haley, which was my dad's mother's father, there in Tennessee. He was a fox hunter.
Yeah, Dixon County. I seen where it was. I think it was Dixon County.
Dixon County. Actually, Hickman County, which is just the next county over.
That's where Loretta Lynn is.
Yes. Okay. Grandpa Haley had foxhounds. And my grandmother, Fielder, his daughter, kept those receipts. She gave them to my dad back years ago.
That's typical of a woman to keep something like that.
Yeah, and then my dad passed them on to me. And that's how I got that. And I have several others, but I think that's the oldest one. I thought I had some from the late 1800s, but that was 1907. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's still pretty darn old.
That's a long time ago, isn't it? For
yeah.
Sure.
That's a little older than I am.
Little bit. Well, you sound good. Your voice is strong. Have you been hunting any?
I might sound good, Steve, but I've been sick a lot, in and out of the hospital quite a bit. I was there yesterday.
Uh-oh.
Well, I wasn't at the hospital. Well, yes, I was, but to see my doctor over there. I've got kidney problems. I've got prostate problems, everything due to an old guy. And I ain't coon hunted since last Monday. That was the last time I was out, and that bothers me.
Well, now, I know it does.
I feel good right now. Believe me, I feel good right now, but when I get out there and start climbing them hills a little bit, it starts bothering me. I got a preacher that hunts with me occasionally, and he hunted with me last Monday, and I was thinking about calling him up today, because the good thing about it, if he goes with me, I called one of them girls to go with me, and she never answered. I don't know where she might have went up her cabin. But I was going to call this preacher, because the best thing about it, when I go with him, if I hand him the leash, I says, "Here, Luke, go get him." he'll bring my dog back for me, and I'll stay at the truck.
Well, a guy our age, Fred, I'm not quite where you are, but I'm coming fast. We need that kind of person. I was just talking to my buddy Nubbin Moore, and he's past 80. And we were talking about our annual White River trip out in Arkansas in November.
Yeah.
And I said, "Nubbin, now if we bring anybody else into our group, we got to make sure they're young guys.
They're younger, a strong lot younger.
Guy." Yeah.
Are you allowed? Now, I never hunted that area, but are you allowed to use four-wheelers or anything?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Well, that makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. The deal out there is they have some gravel roads, of course, that are accessible by any kind of vehicle. And you can hunt off of those roads by just pulling over like you would on a country road back east. But you are not allowed to ride your four-wheelers or side-by-sides on those bigger gravel roads.
But
all along the way, there are what we call trailheads or pull-off areas where you can pull your trailer over, unload your side-by-side or four-wheeler, and then there's just miles and miles of trails that go all through those hardwood forests, and you can just cut a dog any direction you want to turn them loose.
Did you ever hunt in Holly Bluff, Mississippi?
No, I have not.
I used to go down there every year in the wintertime in December, me and my buddies, and hunt with T.C. Jones for a week. He'd get an old tar paper shack that a black slave lived in at one time, pay somebody probably $20 to use a shack for a week. He'd hired some black guy, some poor old guy, to cook for us, keep the place clean and everything else. And we'd go down and we had a heck of a good time. And we had an old black, his name was Oscar, and he was in his late 70s, real nice guy. Well, all them old blacks were nice like that. And the first night we got down there, TC was already in the woods. We told him we'd be there probably around 8 o'clock. We never got there till about 11. And one of my buddies who went with me, we had a cap on the truck. He went in the back and slept with the dogs. And he was okay. He was rested up like new. We got there. We were wore out. We found TC's truck, but we couldn't hear his dogs or nothing. So we went back to the camp. He had drawn me a map how to get there. We got to the camp, and old Oscar, he says, you boys might as well just settle down around the fire and keep warm. Well, everybody put their sleeping bags out and was going to sleep. Well, this one kid, Chucky, that slept all the way down, he said, I'm going hunting. Well, he went out hunting. And he came back about an hour or two later with a real big coon for down there, a good 20 pound. And he was a big one. And he crawled in his sleeping bag, and he sleep in front of the fire. And the coals are coming out of that fire and landing on his sleeping bag. And old Oscar had a little wee wisp broom or something, and he's brushing them coals off.
That's a good guy to have around.
Well, listen, wait, here's the best part. He says, says to him, I said, Oscar, what are you doing? He says, I got to take care of Mr. Chuck because he's the only hunter we got. Because TC came in, he didn't have no coons, and the rest of us didn't go hunting, so Chuck was the only hunter we got.
Oh, those are great stories, Fred. Hey, I've got the recorder going, and you got a few minutes to spend with me?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Well, it's great to catch up with you. I keep meaning, I tell you what, I know about this being under the weather, although maybe what I've had, I hope, is not long term, but we contracted a virus, my wife and me both, down here. It's not COVID, but it must be its mean stepson or something, because it was rough, and I've been really having a hard time with my voice, as you can tell. I get these spasms in my throat.
I'll tell you what will help the voice when mine goes off.
All right, you heard it right here, folks. Okay.
I get them Hall's lozenges and suck on one of them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
At least I can talk better after I have one of them.
Right. I do that too. Of course, my buddy Nubbin Moore, he tells me that recipe he makes down there is what I need.
That's probably snake oil.
Yeah, well, listen, you were telling me you hadn't been hunting. Now, most of the guys around my age and up through your age and all would have said since back in season. You go since last Monday. So what did you do last Monday? Did you have a decent hunt?
We treed two coon, and we didn't stay long. We treed two coon. We saw the first one. The second one we couldn't find. Well, I didn't even go to the second tree. He did. It wasn't that far. The dog run it made like a big circle. The dog run way further than what it was, and then made a circle back and treed. And it was only a little over 200 some yards, but it took him forever to get down there and back. And when he got back to the truck, I says, Luke, how come it took you so long to get back here? He said, you ever been down there? I said, yeah, I've been down there. He says, it is rough. He says, a rabbit can't get through there. He says, there's tree tops everywhere. Well, it's been a while since I've been in that woods, but I know on the right side it was real thick and green briars everywhere, but he didn't go on the right side. He went straight down to where the dog treed, but I guess maybe they did some timbering in there or something. But so we quit after that second coon, and I said, we'll take a couple back roads where I usually see a coon crossing the road. If we see one, we'll turn out and tree one more. If we don't, we'll go home. Well, we didn't see none, so we came home.
I got you. Has it been hot up there?
Not bad at all. We had a couple of days it was a little rough, but it's been pretty, it's nice and cool today. It ain't bad at all. Mm. And, well, of course, we did a lot of hunting in some rain. I don't mind when it's just a drizzle, but when it's really hard like summer, it gets pretty bad. It filled our reservoir, one of the reservoirs for this county. It was less than half, man, and that's a big reservoir. They got a sign out in front of it that tells how many million gallons of water's in there. Well, it sure got down pretty fast, but it's back up again. In fact, a coon hunter that lives on that property called me today. He just got back from British Columbia, and they were up there bear hunting with dogs. They got five bear.
Yeah,
they got
man.
Five bear, and they had a heck of a good hunt. He said bear were everywhere, and it was no trouble training them. He goes every year. He always does good.
Does he hunt the red dogs, too? Or
pardon me?
Does he hunt red dogs, or what?
They hunt a little bit of everything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, most of the bear hunters do.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys in the plot breed that hunt nothing but
the way he talked, though, it was mostly they had three plots, he told me. He said three young plots. He said they were extra good. He said, you know me, Fred, I'm like you. I ain't going to buy no plot dog. But I'd have bought one of them. He said I'd have bought one of them if he'd have made me a price on it. And this guy that liked the plot dogs, he can afford any dog there is, as far as that goes. Mm-hmm. But he said he had three young plot dogs that really acted like they were 5 years old instead of a year old.
And, that's great. Well, there was a guy that used to be in Illinois, and he moved up there that was a plot guy for years and years and years, and I think he's passed on now. His name was Steve Moore. M-O-H-R, and he lived in British Columbia, and he had a line of plots he called the Ursus line, U-R-S-U-S, and that
I remember seeing that in a magazine.
Yeah, that comes from the Latin term for bear. It part of the name is Ursus something. I don't remember, but anyway, yeah. I imagine but that's fairly rough country there in British Columbia, isn't it? Mountainous.
He told me they had to cut a lot of trees to get to the dogs. He says you couldn't get a vehicle up there or anything. He says it'll make a man of you. He says it's some rough territory. And, they treed on one tree, and they borrowed a chainsaw, and the chainsaw wasn't long enough. I don't understand how many inches they come in, but the way he talked, this one was a 40-inch blade on it, and it couldn't cut the tree all the way through. And they had a bear inside it that had already been shot one time.
Oh, and, I wondered why they were cutting a tree.
Well, they wanted to get that bear out of there.
Yeah, if it's wounded, I understand.
They never did get it out.
Darn. Well, yeah, you can get into all kinds of adventures bear hunting. You talked about they're making a man out of you. My dad just about killed me before I got old enough to be a man, running me up and down those mountains in southern West Virginia. So
I treat bear here in Pennsylvania just as I coon hunting, but treat bear by accident.
Yeah.
In 1966, Johnny Chilser, well, he's passed now.
Yeah,
he was hunting with me up in the real big mountains in Pennsylvania, Cowdersport. We treed three in one tree, mother and two big cubs. The cubs were good 100-pound cubs, and there actually was four, but one came down, and four of the dogs took off on it. We never got them back for 3 days. Back then, they didn't have tracking collars, so you just drove the road every day looking for your dogs till you found them. Well, just by luck, we went home. We figured somebody's going to call sooner or later when they see the name tag. We went home, and we no sooner got home, a guy called from up there, and here we were lucky. In the cabin next to where we were staying, with some people from back home in our area, So we contacted them, and they brought our dogs home for us.
Oh, man, you were lucky indeed there. Yeah, for sure.
We were lucky there.
Well, you know, that brings back a lot of memories as when I was a kid, you know, hunting, and my dad would go places. He left a dog up in the, on the Keweenaw Peninsula, way up in the upper peninsula of Michigan.
I was up there bear hunting with Ernest Pauley.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That guy, he was a character.
Plot man.
He was a character.
Joe is still hunting plots.
I understand he is. I never met the kid. He was probably too little. That was in 66 also.
Mm-hmm.
And anyhow, we got four while I was up there. We left and went back home because that was the time Kenton came around. We went down to Kenton, but we got four while we were up there.
Well, that's
and
a good week.
I think Ernest told me they got three more. He bear hunted in spade shoes. I couldn't get over that. He's going through them at water, 2 foot deep in some places. And he's walking through it with spade shoes.
Ernest was hardcore. Now you know.
I guarantee you that
he raised a whole gang of boys. In fact, Jim Pauley, one of his boys, was president of the Plot Association a year, I think, after that I was. And then Joe was younger, and he came along, and he's been involved.
I never got to meet the kids because when he invited me up, we just went straight to the Upper Peninsula and just met everybody there. There was a lot of guys. Brandenburger was there. But he left before we got there. He was up there hunting with some other guys there. And a guy that used to own a plot dog called Bally.
Yeah, B-O-L-L-Y. Clyde Bounds.
He was up there. And we met some of them, but we didn't meet them all.
Yeah.
Some of them had left already.
Yeah, that dog was called Black River Bally. And he wrote a book about him. The fellow's name was Clyde Bounds. B-O-U-N-D-S.
Yeah.
Yes. Very famous plot dog.
He was from Illinois, I believe.
Correct. Yeah. See, a lot of those guys went up there every year. Everett Weems from Illinois, he would go up there. Tom Telford, the guy that used to bring the live bear to plot days for the bear bays and all that, they would all go up there. In the fog, you know.
We run a bear from Michigan to Wisconsin. That's a fact. And of course, it wasn't that far through the woods, and that probably 10 miles. But we got the dogs, some woman found them. And in Wisconsin, we had to go over there to get our dogs.
Well, you know, you make a point there, Fred. You've mentioned it twice now. That back in the day, you know, we did not have any tracking collars, no GPS, no Garmins, no beep beeps, trackers, nothing.
Nowadays, you wonder, how the hell did I get along without them?
Exactly. You just look for the dogs, and that was the most frustrating thing in the world to me, because you know where you turned them loose, and a lot of times they would come back to where you originally cut them loose. But if they got in there running a bear a long distance or whatever, and they run themselves in the ground, they're tired, they lay up, and I think after a while they just forget about it, you know, and they just lay around. We've had them come in where their stool was full of acorn hulls, where they'd been eating acorns.
They were starving when they get to acorns.
I guess. Well, man, what about the Redbone days? They've already had American dinner.
They had the American Redbone days last week, and I was anxious to see what kind of crowd they'd have, because you see how much night hunts have dropped off in attendance. I don't think it's ever going to be back like it used to be. But they had, I think the one night they had right around close to 60 dogs, which ain't a lot, but it's a lot nowadays.
Yeah, and it sure is. And I would remember back in the day, probably on Thursday night at Redbone Days, they would probably have – 100 or more dogs, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I always enjoyed American Days, and I think you and I have talked about this before, but they had their auctions and things like that, and it seemed like they just had, you know, a real friendly group there. I remember Ronnie Smith there from Arkansas was always involved, and what was the one guy, Albert Cameron?
He's gone now too. I think Ronnie Smith's still living. I had a club president, Sid Hackaday from Holmesville, Ohio. I don't think he's a president anymore, but he told me in Holmesville, Ohio, which National had Redbone Day at Holmesville, Ohio, at least probably 10 times.
Yeah.
I loved that place.
Oh, yeah, it's a good place.
It was the best club in the state of Ohio.
Good club.
He said, Fred, we'd rather put on one Redbone Day than 20 other hunts. He says that we never have no problem. He says everybody seems to have a good time. We get good attendance. He says, we love to have Redbone Day. Well, several years ago, the guys all complained about being too hot 4th of July weekend and stuff like that, and they decide to move it. I'm sorry to say I went along with the crowd, but I wish we'd have stayed at Holmesville. I always thought that was one of the better clubs I ever went to.
Yeah, a lot of good memories of hunting around Holmesville there.
And there's good clubs to help out nearby. Mm-hmm. Ashland ain't far. The club up in
Jeromesville.
Medina. Yeah, all of them were close by.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mount Vernon, maybe. I'm not sure. Yeah, that's, well, you know, I see the entries. I was looking the other day, probably on Facebook or somewhere, that looked like English Days had a pretty good crowd here in June. So maybe it's, you know, they're bouncing back a little bit. I hope so.
Well, I hope so, but... I mean, Bill Lash called me. He's up in northern Pennsylvania. He said, you been to any hunts? I said, no, I just been hunting around home. I said, you go any? He says, yep. He says, I went to one last week. There was four dogs. I was one of them, and another guy was there with three of his. That was it.
Yeah,
I says, well, what'd you win? Fourth place. He said, I turned around and come home. So,
Well, you know, we can get on these podcasts and talk, and I don't think these younger guys probably believe us. But, Fred, we know there was a day when you wanted to go to a night hunt somewhere on a Saturday night. You better go early. You wouldn't get a parking place. You'd have to park way down the road.
I'll never forget this. When I first started going to night hunts, I still remember the first one I ever went to. I didn't take a dog. I went as a spectator. I wanted to see what it was about. The next one, I took a dog. But then after that, I got the bug, and I started going to them. The first big one, I went to Millersburg, Ohio, the Amish country. I went to a night hunt there, and a great hunt. On Friday night, a great hunt had 80-some dogs. That's the truth. That's a lot of dogs. And now there was only about 14 registered dogs on Saturday night, but rest assured that 14 increased to about 28 the next Saturday. They all had papers next week.
They were ringing that number on Kilgore Road, weren't they, buddy?
Yes, they were. Yes, they were.
Yeah, for sure.
But I remember many a great hunt where they had 50, 60 dogs. So, but it soon picked up on that. They all got papers. They all got registered dogs. But the hunts were good until recently, the last couple of years. But I hope they come around. But there's no young kids coming to the hunts.
You know, go ahead.
We got a youth hunt next weekend, and we generally get around in the 50s in dogs. I'm overly anxious to see what we get this time. And here's the best part. We charge no entry for a kid whatsoever. Every one of our club members, well, not everyone, but most of them, will donate $50 a piece, and that goes towards some kid's prize. They get to go in a dog supply truck, pick anything they want up to $50 worth of goodies, fishing rods, lights, everything. They get their money's more than their money's worth, and we do good on that. We had a fair crowd last year. It wasn't like we expected. And Packy's the one that started that stuff. We used to, the only state that ever beat us is North Carolina, to my knowledge. And they didn't beat us by much, but they got maybe 8 or 10 dogs more than we did. But we were always second in attendance on the youth hunt. And we get some darn nice crowds here. I hope next weekend is like it used to be. We'll find out. Yeah.
Well, there's a guy down in Georgia, and I'm going to have him on the podcast, I believe, the next episode. And I've got his name here somewhere, Caden Riley. And they're doing what they call the Peach State Shootout Georgia Youth Series. Okay, they're down in Georgia. What they're doing is they're having 8 qualifying events. Now, they've had 2, they had 1 in May, 2 in May. They just had one on the 8th of June. They've got another one on the 22nd of June, then the 29th, then July 12th, July 20th, and August 16th. And then they're going to have a runoff of all this where the first place.
What town do they have in Georgia?
Okay. These are kind of in different towns down there. They've had one in Claxton, Gillsville, Chatsworth, Rydell, Rydell, I guess it is, R-Y-D-A-L. They have Shelman, Somerville, Carrollton, and then Shelman again. And so anyway, I'm going to have Caden on and let him talk about that and some of the kids and give them some recognition. Fred, I'm all about this promoting these kids. I mean, we really got to do it.
I talk to Kerry Rooks at least 2-3 times a week. And I'm funny. It's surprising that he didn't mention that to me. Undoubtedly, he didn't hear about it, because he always tells me about the different hunts down there that they have. And like I say, that's good. Maybe it'll increase and get better and better.
Yeah, well, this is, I guess, through PKC. I don't know how much. I think Kerry hunts PKC too, doesn't
yeah,
he?
He hunts PKC.
Yeah. He's the coon hunting funeral director, isn't he?
Yep.
Yeah, Kerry's been around a long time.
He's a county coroner, and he has 2 funeral homes.
I got you. Well, there's another fella, Ronnie Stark, over in Mississippi, that's a coon hunting coroner over there. Yeah, that's a job I don't think I'd enjoy too much.
Maybe you ought to, UKC ought to get together and have a hunt just for funeral directors.
that'd be all right. I mean, you know, I'd seen a couple casts walk out the door at hunts before. I thought we might need to call one before they got back in.
I was at a world hunt in, it was in Ohio, somewhere near Chillicothe, and the guy drowned years ago.
That was an AKC world hunt.
Yeah.
And he did. He tried to cross the river to get to his dog. And as what'll happen, you know, these waders we got, that's like putting your feet in concrete when they fill up with water.
Yeah, they fill up with water.
Yeah. Yeah, that's happened several times. We had a couple of hunters in Michigan that were real prominent hunters that were bobcat hunting and drowned that way. And I remember Lee Curran's telling me he was a field rep for AKC back in those days.
Right.
That's when Dick Sheets was running the show there for those guys.
Ohio.
Yeah. And he told me about them getting a cadaver dog out there to find that guy in that river. And they did find him, yeah, with a dog. You know, that scent, the gases and so forth to the surface. It's a terrible, terrible thing, and something that always, two cautions that I'm glad they got instilled in me when I was young, but I've done both of them, and that's climbing trees and wading water that I did, what was uncertain about, you know, because in Michigan, a lot of those streams are murky, mucky bottoms. There's no hard bottom in them.
Did you ever be master hounds or anything in a hunt down in Paducah, Kentucky, where it's a Quonset hunt?
Yeah, absolutely. I was there for Redbone Days in July.
I was there Redbone Day. Yeah. Me and my buddy, we were going somewhere else, but I said, let's take a dog and stop at Redbone Day and at least hunt one night. So we got down there on Thursday night, and it's the old Redbone hunt. And I had the gold dog in, and I drew a cast from, I remember one of the people because I later sold him a dog. They were, their name was Walkers. They were from Florida, and they used to advertise that, but I don't even think they coon on anymore. But anyhow, my dog hunting.
Did you ever meet Jimmy Russell down there from that area?
Yeah, I knew Jimmy.
Yeah, he's a Redbone man.
Yeah, he is. Yep. He used to run dogs in the ACHA world. I know a lot.
Yeah.
But anyhow, my dog swam. We got to a big pond, and he swam a pond all by himself and treed out on a little island, like out there with one tree on that island. Well, you got to go to him if you want to see a coon. And I hesitated even going to that. I knew I couldn't call him off. And the other dogs went a different way. But the judge said, well, let's get in the water, boys. Well, the judge, me, and one of the spectators or one of the other handlers went in the water. It was up to our neck. All the way across.
Mm.
Well, I wasn't worried about drowning or anything because I was on the swimming team in high school. I thought I could swim on anything. But what I was worried, I'll shine my light everywhere looking for them moccasins to be coming swimming. Fortunately, I didn't see no snakes. I got to the island maybe 2 foot ahead of everybody else. And when I got there, I shined my light when we started shining the lights. I shined mine maybe a couple seconds before them. I just had a wheat light then, and it burned out right after I shined, but I caught the eyes.
No.
I caught the eyes right away, and I left the light off. I said, boys, I seen the coon, but you can get right on the right side of my shoulder, and I'm going to shine it again. Give me a couple minutes to let it charge up. Maybe I can catch the eyes again. And I got lucky. It looked right at us again the second time, so I got the score on that. That made it good, and I ended up winning the all Redbone hunt down there that night. And my clothes stunk so bad, you never smelt nothing. And my wallet, I didn't take it out of my pocket. Did that stink. I bet when I paid somebody at a restaurant or something, they smelt them bills, they wondered where I was.
You know what fooled me about hunting down there around that part of the country? And of course, when I was with PKC over there at Land Between the Lakes, you know, at Aurora, we hunted at all those clubs out around Paducah,
right.
Smithland, up around Clinton, up where Joe House was from, up that way, and all over. But you get out there in those woods and those big river bottoms and stuff, and those darn frogs, they all sound like dogs treeing to me. Have you ever experienced that?
Have I ever what?
Experienced the frogs down there when you're hunting in the summertime.
No, I didn't think they were any different than
up
here.
Oh, man.
Same,
Yeah, some places I went, I guess around Benton, Kentucky, there in those areas. And those frogs, they clunk like, and they almost sound like a dog barking. Oh, 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 like that, you know?
I've heard of them, but not down there, but I've heard yeah. of other places.
Oh, yeah. Well, the night sounds. We could do a whole podcast talking about the different sounds out there in the night and the things. But, yeah, well, that hunting down there, especially July, is hot because PKC would have the Breeders' Showcase there at Aurora in July, and it was unbearably hot. One year, for some reason, they had a mix-up on the scheduling, and we didn't get to use the air-conditioned building, the tennis center, and we had to do everything outside. And, man, it was hot. Oh,
I've been a couple that is probably right around 100, I imagine.
Oh, yeah, and you worry about the dogs treeing, you know, in those thick places and all where they can't get any circulation.
Well, Patty, that girl I mentioned to you a couple times previously, her dog and my dog, we left them treed too long before we got to where they were. This was about 2 years ago. She had a good black dog that died from heat stroke right there at the tree. My dog was in bad shape, but I got him to a creek and splashed them all up with water. I did lose a good dog at Ashland, Ohio, at a Red Bone. I won, I think, second place the first night. The second night I was running, he got out of the pocket and treed way across the field. And there were some Amish boys there, spectators, and they called time out, not for my dog, but for other dogs getting out of the pocket. And they said, let's round these dogs up and so forth. Well, these Amish boys came up to me and they said, the Garmin wasn't showing me where the dog was. And for some reason, I don't remember. And these Amish boys says, your dog's across that field over in the next woods treeing. He'd been treeing for a half hour. I says, are you kidding me? He said, no. He says, you listen. Well, I stopped and listened. I didn't hear nothing. But we start walking, and the Garmin finally picked him up. We walked right to him. He was laying under a tree that had two coon up it, and he barked himself out, and he was completely out. I had a black guy that used to hunt with me all the time. I says, great, pick him up, and let's take him, find a creek, and let's put him in a creek. And that's what we did. We found a creek, soaked him real good. Then we went to the Amishman's farm, and he put a hose all over him. The dog still wasn't able to stand up. We carried him to the truck. I says, we're headed home. If we see a vet along the way, we're going to stop, see a sign, not wake him up or something. Well, when I drove about 50 miles, I stopped and looked in the back of the dog box, and he was standing up for a second or two. I said to Greg, the guy that was with me, I said, I think he's going to be okay now. He's at least standing up. I got him home. He was in the vets for 4 days. And when I got him back after 4 days and he seemed normal to me, I decided to take him hunting one night. My wife says to me, you're going to kill that dog. You shouldn't hunt him yet. I says, he'll be all right. I'm just going to treat one coon and come home. And that's just what I did. I treated one coon. He seemed pretty normal to me. And I waited another couple of days, and then I started hunting him every day again. But I thought, sure, I was going to lose him. And I did lose him. I lost him. That was at Ashland also. I lost him to an automobile about a year later.
Well, and, there's no end to the hazard for these dogs out there of all kinds. But you bring up a good point, Fred. For this time of year especially, listeners need to be aware all the time about those dogs in these dog boxes.
I've told everybody this. I worked for a vet for 2 years when I was in high school. Dogs cannot take heat. And that's the worst thing on a dog is a real hot spot. They can't take heat like we could. And so, and we have the brains to get out of the heat and so forth. They don't know any better. They're doing what they were trained to do, triacoon, and they don't know that it's going to be hotter than usual or something like that. But heat will take more out of a dog than anything, in my opinion.
Well, for sure. And down here, it's so humid. I don't see how the dogs can get any air at all. And over my years, you know, just like you, Fred, many, many miles, many years, I've seen a lot of bad situations. I saw a fella pull into Boonville, Indiana, down there in southern Indiana near Evansville, with some dogs in a dog box in the back of one of these pickup campers, you know, the slide-in kind of camper that goes.
That's the worst thing you could do is have a dog box with a cap on it.
Yeah, exactly. And two were already, I believe one or two were already gone when he opened it up. The other one, I remember Doc Kelly, you know Doc Kelly from Michigan. He worked out there at the Water Race Pond for I don't know how long with this one dog. And that's what he was doing, you know, got him in the water, trying to keep him cool. Got him back up on the bank, kept splashing cold water on his belly, you know, and all. But
go ahead.
No.
Dwayne Brough came down to our hunt at Washington, Pennsylvania one time, and he had a truck with a cap on and a dog box in it. Had six dogs in that dog box. I don't remember now, but I think four of them were dead when he got there. Mm. That's a damn shame to lose them that way. But, hey, you live and learn. A lot of kunai learned from them lessons.
Yeah, you know, I think that pendulum is swinging with the younger hunters and all seem to be taking better care of their dogs. I think there was a mindset way back that this is just as my mother used to say, a brute, you know, an animal is just she didn't think dogs were, but I mean, she would use that term, that they were just like, a wild animal out there. They can withstand anything, but that's not so. And dogs don't perspire like we do through their pores.
No, they don't.
You know, and well, that's a good reminder for our listeners out there. Summertime, how many times have I been to a hunt over the years? And I've been to a few where we had to try to find somebody, we had to take water to somebody's dog and try to locate them, where they tied them out. Maybe that morning the sun, they were in the shade, the sun moved.
The sun moved and the dog didn't.
That's correct. And that poor dog standing there, with no water, heat boiling down on him. Thank God most of our hunters are not like that anymore. But fellas, listen, when you go to the hunts, whatever you're doing with your dog, think about them first. They can't, you know, you've got them contained. They can only do so much.
Give them
nice, fresh, cold water, all they'll drink, and keep them in the shade. And if you can, get a fan or something to blow on. Man, I tell you what, I live in Florida. I know all about this heat thing and how to manage it.
But, I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
I don't have it in this kennel where I'm at now, but my other kennel, I had air conditioning.
That's great.
Up here in PA, we don't need it that often, but it sure helps when you do have it.
Yeah, well, if you can get the air stirring around a little bit, maybe. Sometimes, I've seen a lot of guys have these box fans that they secure to the outside of the kennel wire, or some of them have different kinds of rotating fans, but you got to be careful about dogs where they can't get in and chew into the wire. Dogs, you know, they don't get it sometimes that you're trying to help them. You know, they just find something, oh boy, this would be good to chew on, you know. And well, what do you got out there in the kennel right now, Fred, that you're liking?
I only have two dogs. One I've had a little over a year, a female. She's 3 years old. And I like her. She's smart. She's sensible. Got a good mouth for a female. Nice tree dog. And she's my main dog. I got a male, but Kerry Rooks is getting it. It's a year old. He's a heck of a tree dog. He's a little too tight mouth for me. If he opened a little bit better, he'd be here for a while. But that's the only fault. He's straight. He treats a lot of coon. He'll get it. Every time you turn him loose, you're going to get him off a tree somewhere. And but I wish he'd open a little bit more. And but Kerry will like him. He's bought a bunch of dogs off me, and he should like us. And like I say, he's still a year old yet, and so he's got a long way to go yet. But that's all I got is two dogs.
I got you. Well, while we're talking about that now, my buddy Corey Groover there, you know Corey, don't
you? Yeah,
from
Greenville.
Yeah.
I know Corey.
He's been on the podcast with me here some, and we were talking in the last couple of episodes about tree dogs and, you know, the kinds we like and the mouths and the different styles, and then we talk about some of the problems that show their ugly heads around a tree and all. What's your biggest gripe about a tree dog? Is there some kind of a behavior quality of a tree dog that you just can't stand?
I've had my share of chewers. I don't like that.
Right.
Now, I don't mind just maybe for 10 seconds or something like that, but I don't want one of them to chew for half a minute or three quarter, and I've had them. My magic dog was a chewer, and he threw pups who were chewers, which I didn't like, but he did it. And an old timer told me years ago, and I find it to be pretty much true. Chewer don't leave no trees, and it still stands today as a rule, but I don't like that.
Yeah.
I don't like running a tree, and that's two habits it's hard to break. I've snuck up in the woods with a shock and collar on a dog and keep my light out, and when I hunt all my dog with a light on the collar, right. And when I see that light going up the tree, and I know what he's up to, I give him a tap. It's helped on a couple dogs. It never broke none of them completely. My buddy broke his like that, but I never broke one completely, but I did slow them up a lot. And some of them, when you start working on them with a collar, they'll be okay for two or three nights, and they'll go back to it. So you got to keep after.
Well, that's that prey drive, I think. They want that coon. They want to get that thing down. And we certainly talked about that, about dogs that chew. I had a nice big plot dog that I really liked. I never did break him of chewing. I tried a muzzle. I tried different things. You could tap him with the Tritronics. Back then, we didn't have the alphas and all where we could track and train and same unit.
I know guys use tobacco sauce on it and everything else. And Fred Lubert used to tell me that's what he did. He said it worked for him. Well, it might work for him, but it didn't work for me. Right. I'll try anything one time and see if it does work.
Yeah.
But the shocker does work, but I'm not saying it does it all the time. But it definitely would slow them down. But usually three or four nights later, they go back to it and forget what they learned, and you have to tap them again. But
dogs learn through repetition and consistency. You know, the same thing that you need to – if you're trying to train for one thing, you need to do it the same way every time, till you finally drill it in there, you know, and pack it in. But like you say, it doesn't always last forever. They need a refresher course, you know, from time to time. Well, that's interesting.
To me, it's an inherited trait once they start it, and it's hard to get it out of them.
Yep. I definitely agree with that. And then, in dealing with these things, and we tried, you know, I've always tried to say to these guys, there's no quick fixes, usually, and there's no guarantees, you know, and all these dogs are different. Some of them are genetic behaviors, and some of them are, they're learned behaviors. Dogs will learn that stuff from other dogs, you know, just watching the other dogs, you know.
Yeah, like I say, if you ask 20 coon hunters, you get 20 different answers.
That's right.
Everybody's got their own method. Some work to a degree, but most of them, you're still asking questions.
Oh, yeah. Well, everybody likes to think that their opinion is the right one, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And coon hunters, I don't know if you've noticed this, Fred, but when they get around the crowd, they'll kind of embellish the story a little bit, you know.
Just a little bit.
Well, what you like, a chop mouth or a ball mouth tree dog, or does it matter?
I prefer a chop mouth if I can have it, but I've had some pretty good ball mouth tree dogs.
Yeah,
I got rid of one, and that was the only reason I got rid of him. I felt he was as good as any dog I had, but he balled on a tree. And yeah. I had two sisters to him and a brother. And they were all open perfect on a tree, and they chopped like they should. Everyone I made a night champion out of, at least, and two of them I think went on to be grand knight, but this one, and he was probably one of the better ones of the four, and he balled on a tree, didn't go nowhere. You could call him treat on the first locate, and he'd have a coon, but I wish he'd have chopped. I'd have kept him.
Yeah.
I sold him to Sid Hackaday in Ohio at the Home Show Club, and I often asked him, I said, tell me the truth. He's the best dog you ever owned, ain't it? He says, well, maybe second best. I knew he wouldn't say first. But he was a nice dog.
Yeah. Well, my buddy down in Virginia there has the Clyde dog. He came from Randy Smith. He's a ball mouth tree dog all the way, but man, can he tree those raccoons. But he's a young man's dog. He's going to cover some ground, you know.
I hunted with a dog out of Randy's dog, about 6-7 months ago. Bill Lash and his buddy Cody Fisher came down. Cody's a state trooper here in Pennsylvania, and he brought this young dog down. He was only about 8 months old then. He split treed from my dog definitely one time, and he had a coon. I think he might have done it twice that night. I'm not sure. He was doing good. He had him in 8 hunts and won his calves 8 times.
Oh,
my
God.
Can't beat that. Can't beat that.
No, that's about as good as you can get, right? Yeah. That's awesome. Well, Randy's got another young one there that's doing real good. Well, he got a male. He calls him Prophet, False Prophet, and he's out of the Frogger dog out in Ohio that's making so much noise, and as a stud dog, and the Sioux female that Randy won the World Hunt with. But he's got one there out of Frogger that he calls Farah, and his boy Troy, won a youth deal here last weekend, something to Trey and Walker. So Randy's real proud these days. He's got his oldest boy is really liking the coon hunting, and he's really getting involved with it.
Well, that's good, because a lot of they might grow up in the family of coon hunters, but they don't mean they're going to be coon hunters.
Yeah, for sure. Just a minute. Let me. Some reason I'm getting a call coming in here. Can you hear that? Did I lose you, Fred?
Didn't pay the bill.
I lost you somehow. It sounded like all of a sudden it was like it was ringing back to me. We'll have to get the engineer to fix that little gap in our recording.
I figure you didn't pay the bill.
So. Probably so. I'll blame it on my wife.
That's what to do.
Yeah, but she doesn't take it that too well.
She's not
a little better at that stuff than I am. Yeah. Well, hey, you know, we have talked here almost an hour, but are you going to try to go to National Days over 4th of July?
I'll put it this way. It's in my head, but it ain't in my body at the present time. But I told that Luke, preacher that coon hunts with me, he wanted to go. He said, "You want to go?" He said, "We could use my truck." I said, "I ain't worried about a truck." I says, I was supposed to go with Zach Kane, another guy up here, coon hunter. But Zach backed out. He says he don't think he's going now. Well, I thought about Luke. I said, "I'll tell you what. It's going to be a last-minute deal. I'll let you know ahead of time." I says, "I want to go." I said, "But I don't know how I'll be feeling the way I've been feeling lately. I might sound good on the phone right now, but I don't feel good. Today's the best I've felt in probably 3 or 4 days. But we'll see. It's the old saying, everybody says it, and I'll say it again. It's hell to get old.
I heard the one, you know, it's not for sissies, and that's for sure. I tell my wife every day, I said, "Man, I just didn't realize that when I got to this age that I was just going to kind of feel bad every day." You know, I mean, I'm thankful that I can do what I can do, you know.
I've had probably 100 hunters ask me through the years, "Moran, when you going to quit?" I said, "When someone beats me to a tree." I said, "Then I know it's time to hang it up." Well, lately, a lot of people beat me to the tree. I'm giving it careful consideration.
But you know one thing that I notice about Fred Moran is that mind is sharp as a razor. And that's going to carry a long way, Fred. And how many years you got past you now?
I'm 87.
87. Well, you're doing great, and you're going to pass 90 backing up.
Listen, Bill Lash and that Cody Fisher came down hunting with me during deer season. They brought their grandfather. Cody brought his grandfather. He's 90 years old. I took him hunting Moran style. I showed him. Now, this is hard to believe, but it's the truth. I could prove it by 4 people. I showed him 202 deer that day. And the old man couldn't get over it. We killed a couple. And the old man couldn't get over it. It was 90. His mind was damn sharp. I says, "I hope my mind's that good." And he was pretty good for 90 years old. Well, sorry to say, he passed on since that, but that was back in December. Mm-hmm. But the guy was quick in his wits and everything else, and I enjoyed hunting with him. He was a lot of fun. He was Cody's grandfather. But we had a good time that day, and we certainly saw plenty of deer.
Yeah, well, that's great. You know, last fall when Nub and Moore and I were out in Arkansas, we decided to go one night on private land with a fellow that I'd had a lot of correspondence with him. His name is Matt Collins, and he lives there in Marianna, Arkansas, and then has a house out near what's called Sweat's Camp. That's where Jarvis started a lot of those reunion hunts and things that he used to hold out there. But anyway, that night we went over and hunted with Mac, and he brought his dad along. And he's well up in, I'm sure, up in his 80s, if not 90. And he was just such a pleasure to be with and to talk to and all. And we enjoyed him. The dogs were treed way out there, and we had a side-by-side and all. And I said, "Mr. Collins, jump in that seat right there and ride out." "Oh, no, I walk. I need the exercise," he said. And, you know, so. But, of course, that's flat country out there, you know.
Yeah, I used to enjoy when I went down hunting with T.C. Jones. I did that for about 7-8 years. And I met a guy one time who was a real estate salesman, but he was from Oklahoma. His last name was Giles, G-I-L-E-S.
Okay.
And he brought some dogs down to T.C. Jones's for T.C. to sell for him. And I found what he told me in a statement to be 100% true. I said, "Mr. Giles, what are you doing all the way from Oklahoma, clear here in Mississippi?" He said, "Well, I brought some dogs down for Mr. Jones to sell for me." And he says, I says, "You can't sell them up there in Oklahoma. You have to bring them clear here to Mississippi." He says, "Mr. Fred, there ain't nobody can sell a dog like T.C. Jones." And I found that to be 100% true. He could sell a dog. He was a dog man deluxe. I felt he was the only, I know there's others that are probably just as smart or better even, but he taught me some tricks that I never would have thought of. He knew dogs. He definitely was a dog man.
Well,
I had a lot of good times with T.C. We used to play so many tricks on him, me and my bunch, but he was quite a character.
Yeah.
He used to come to Kenton with a load of dogs, maybe 30 dogs on a truck. He'd go home empty all the time and could not fold his wallet. He had money in money in every pocket.
Oh, those are the good old days that will never be back. They'll never be back, Fred. But I tell you what, to have lived through it is a blessing to me. You know, I remember all the locals. You know, every once in a while my mind goes back and just trying to remember all the coon hunters. We had a lot of coon hunters in southern West Virginia. We had more coon hunters than we did coons, and that's no lie.
I used to go to a lot of hunts in West Virginia. There was two guys. One was a plot man. He was a character. We played so many tricks on him, me and my buddy, and I can't. He lived at, they went to the Middleburn Club all the time. I know his name if I heard it, but I can't think of it now. That's been so long ago. But they were characters, and they came to our hunts and so forth. But he had a plot dog. It was a pretty good dog. I just don't remember that dog's name now. But
Sunny Place? Sunny Place? Was it Sunny Place?
No.
Sunny had, what was that dog's name? There was a boy from over there in Eastern Ohio. I think Sonny was from Eastern
Ohio. He was from West Virginia, definitely. Mm-hmm. And they came up to my place or met me halfway a couple times, and we just went hunting and pulled over a place I knew and halfway for both of us. But like I say, that was a good old days. And and that's when they had some big crowds in them night hunts.
Oh, boy.
In the late 60s, late 60s,
well,
early 70s.
Well, see, that's when I broke in. You know, my dad would drive me, took me to Barlow, Ohio, to Southeastern Ohio Championship, 106 dogs that night.
That's
and
a good crowd.
I won sixth place. Man, you thought
I
won.
I bet you still got that trophy.
I guarantee you I do. I know I do. And that's the very first one I ever. It's about a foot tall, and it was metal. All the coon tree, and it was made by Bill Boatman. And
I had trophies from Bill Boatman. Yeah. But when I moved two years ago, I had all them, and well, I call them dust catchers. I'd like to have all the entry back at one time. I could buy a Cadillac. And anyhow, I called two different coon clubs, Blairsville and Laurelville. I says, come down here, get any trophy you want, take as many as you want. You can have them for youth hunts and everything else. Just get new plates made. I give 650 trophies away that I know of, and I still got a bunch.
Oh, yeah.
And I had them in a dumpster. I told them, take them because that's where they're going. I mean, I was as proud of the one I got, the first one I ever had, is if I won it yesterday.
Oh, but yeah.
The novelty one. I'll never forget. Years ago, maybe you don't even remember this, maybe you do. Eastern Distributing Company sold dog supplies.
Yeah, they sold scents, trail
Joe
scents.
Joe Orvis was the owner. He liked me, and he sold trophies. And I remember the first trophy I won that came from him. It didn't have no nameplate, but I won first place. It was only about 8 inches high. But I took the trophy to a hunt that I knew he'd be there. How come my name ain't on there, or how come you don't have first place? He says, I'll bring it back to you. He told me when I'll bring it back to you, and you'll get it back. It'll be engraved. You know, he engraves with a hammer and a nail.
Oh, no.
I used to show it to guys. They laugh like it. I says, let me show you the good engraving on this trophy. Joe was a character, but he put my picture on the cover of his magazine. So that made me feel better.
Hey, I remember a place over there in Ohio called the Coon Den. Do you remember those people? A guy named Mike Saw?
I remember hearing that name.
Yeah, that was a popular one. Of course, you know, so many of those suppliers, Jim Gatton with Sunburst, you know, over there.
Yeah, I remember that.
Had supplies and, oh boy, I can't remember them all. Well, Fred, the voice has given out.
A lot of people will be glad, maybe.
I said that the other day. I said, now sometimes I open my mouth and nothing but air comes out. And I said, there's a lot of people out there said, man, where was that for all these years? Hey,
that's
buddy,
really
you're sounding great. I hope you get things.
Well, it was nice talking to you. It's been a good while.
You bet, and we'll hook up again just as quickly as I can think of it to call your number. Take care of yourself, Fred.
You too. You too, Steve.
Okay.
I'll see you. See you in the movies.
All right. Folks, that's the great Fred Moran, the Redbone Man. Yes, sir.
One more thing. Good night, JJ.
We can't forget JJ, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, folks, that's going to do it for this week's episode. As you know, when the voice is gone in this business, the show is over. I want to thank you for listening, and it's always a joy to have Fred Moran on the show. Fred, at 87 years old and still actively coon hunting. Amazing story. For my friends that are going to be out at Flora, Illinois, on the weekend that I'm recording this, or the week, for plot days, I wish you the very best. I would love the fellowship, get to see everyone. An event I attended for many years with my dad, and it's near and dear to my heart, and my heart will be with you fellas out there enjoying that great coon hunting and the great times at Charlie Brown Park. Okay, folks, that's it for the Gone to the Dogs podcast this week. If anyone asks you where Steve Fielder, just tell them, well, you know Steve, he's gone to the dogs.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.